Dom Giordano on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
All right, it is Dom time. So President Biden, new poll out, devastating one on top of all the others. About 70% of self-described Democrats want him out. We're on that again. And the race is on. Will the DNC, which is filled with the establishment, actually have people do a nomination digitally? Void the convention? Yeah, Adam Schiff has just called for Biden to drop out. He's hinted at stuff before, but now a guy running for office, establishment figure, calling for that. Here we go again. We're not going to nominate him for president. He's not even a senator. He's running for the Senate. So, yeah. No, I don't think it's that, but we are going to see this ratchet up more. Apparently, there was a disturbing Zoom call he did with so-called moderates. I still think he sticks this out, although this is going to be at the level that it was prior to the shooting of President Trump. Again, if they go with Biden, he's going to lose. I know that, and you know that, as long as the Trump campaign continues to push all out. You just heard. That's the news to me. I know it's easy to get caught up in all the just shock over the Secret Service and what engaged here, whether or not they actually even had frontline. Dan, you said there was a report about most of them were temporary. I can't imagine the Secret Service has temps. That might be the wrong. I've said it was the B team there, whatever the backups are. I think they ought to admit they're stretched too thin. They need somebody more hard charging to be in charge of this and develop more high quality Secret Service agents. That's money well spent. But aside from that, this is beyond shocking what went on here. This is bordering on criminal negligence. The protocols and what they use that allow this. You heard that from some people today, and Sean Parnell just happened to be there. All right, so you have that going on. But the story today is Mike Johnson announces a task force will be set out on Monday. I know it would be distracting from the convention and all this, but this can't go on. That'll be well over a week since the shooting. This ought to be done now. And I asked at the beginning, and I know that people were pretty tepid. Dan was 80%. I was high 90s. Confidence I have in Jordan and Johnson to get to the bottom of this. And the question becomes accountability. Let me throw it out what I said to a couple of people. Accountability sometimes is not on the individual, like the head of the Secret Service. I mean, I want her out of there for obvious reasons. We're dealing with life and death. But accountability could also be this exposes what DEI does. It exposes what progressivism does. It exposes potentially what infiltrated here, seeing Trump as Hitler, and we're not going to provide the very best. We don't ratchet it up, even though he's the more obvious one that needs more protection, given what they knew about Iran and everything else. So what level of confidence do you have in Mike Johnson? Jim Jordan will be on it, I believe, and some others to get to the bottom of this. And we don't need months. You subpoena people to come in. They don't come in on a Tuesday. They come in when you want them in there. You work through the weekend. You testify 10, 12, 15 hours a day, whatever it takes. That's what we want to see. There's no higher priority than protecting Trump in this situation. Because we all know, if the worst had happened on Saturday, can you imagine, and several people have alluded to it today, where we would be as far as how this would be playing out? Okay, so your level of confidence. Now, it's easy to say, well, I'm not confident in anything. They're not going to do anything. Okay, noticing Democrats, though, have found where to go. I wanted to talk about this a little bit. You can't have a perfect VP candidate. People saying, well, go with Burgum. Nobody can be offended by him. He doesn't do, you know, who's going to be? I see nothing in Burgum. I'll still go. I don't know what Trump was seeing, Dan. I know he might have brought more money. the energies are and talking about that. You heard him in Wildwood, though. Man, this is bad, picturing Burgum as the VP. Rubio brings something, but I think there's not a trust level there with Trump. The two of them coalescing afterward would be very difficult. There would be, you know, the difficult thing as a president is you want someone that's going to help you to win, but you want someone that you're going to be able to deal with other than just freezing them out. You know, that's not a good thing to try to go down that path.
How much do you think the future played into this decision? Because you think
I don't think a lot.
You don't think so?
Because no.
Like, if you think of the next election, if Trump right. were to say, hey, and maybe this is Trump Jr.'s argument, Vance, if he's elevated to president after, you know, you got to step right. aside, let's make the trade of Don Trump Jr. as the VP for Vance when Vance becomes president and we make it cyclical. And, you know, there's that. And is he the person that Trump Jr. trusts most to follow through on that promise?
Well, frankly, I hope that Trump doesn't, because I don't care right now about 2028. I'll admit it, Dan. It's one thing, and I think Trump's this way too. You know what he's thinking? How do I get over the finish line now? All that other stuff is great, but how do you get over the finish line now? And I guess Vance is appealing to him. He's a millionaire. He's very accomplished. He's got a great life story. And Don Trump Jr. really wanted this and really pushed for it. I don't know that he's thinking, oh, in 2028, it'll be Trumpism.
But is the fact that the election's allegedly, you know, going to be Trump regardless,
right?
Did that switch? Because there are rumors that Trump wanted Burgum, right?
He did.
And Trump Jr. wanted Vance. So you have the butting right. heads there. Was Burgum the choice until this happened? And then Trump Jr. made the argument, look, Vance has this promise to me, and then we're going to go forward, and it's going to be a win no matter what, so why not get Vance in there now? I mean, this is all pontificating. I want to be clear. You know,
yeah, I hear you. But
stuff that you might be able to hear coming up here when we have Trump Jr. live on stage.
That's what we're going to ask him. Among other things, we have like an hour and 15 minutes with him on July 30th. So we got a great venue, Scottish Rite, and there couldn't be more. God knows between now and then with Don Trump Jr., the things that will be in play. You'll get all that, and you'll get a copy of Letters to Trump, this big coffee table book that is fabulous. It's really well put together. If I had to say the premise of the book, is Trump saying, look at how people treated me then before I ran for office. Oprah, Hillary Clinton, glowing letters back and forth, particularly with Oprah, personal relationship. What is it with these people that suddenly I'm Hitler? That's, you know, that's exactly what's going on in this. We'll do all that. You get your tickets at 1210WPHT.com. That's where you go. So Johnson announces task force. What's your level of confidence? You can be clear on that. I mean, what is it that that task force is going to be able to do and come up with? Problem as I see it, we're already wasting a week and days. Once you get farther away from this, then more conspiracy theories develop, more things are harder to pin down. Who do you want to talk with? Well, we want to talk with the head of the detail that day. I'm seeing more stories again, maybe bring some of these people in. It's hard to get inside the mind. We want to know about the phone. They should not be taking forever with releasing details on this. Every time you try to press these people on this, they'll tell you it's a matter of national security. We can't release details. The more they do that, the more conspiracies start to play out. That's what the issue is here. All right, so 855-839-1210. And Sean Parnell just gave you a great blow-by-blow, so to speak, account and how horrifying it was to realize they left that roof unprotected. Again, it's all in the Secret Service. They've acknowledged that originally, of course, they saw that as a problem. Then they went with a smaller perimeter. We've had experts on. Alan West saying that in a recruit in the Army, when he was a colonel, you expected to be able to fire and hit something at 300 yards. This is well within that. This is ludicrous how low we've sunk. And Saturday, Trump will be in Michigan with Vance. So So it's going to be interesting to see, do they ratchet up and go with the very best in this task? And again, anybody with common sense would have to say, we got to protect Trump maybe more than anybody other than the president, simply because we know what the threat level is. And if you care about the country, you have to realize what would happen if the worst happened there, the difficulties with that. All right. I mentioned one other thing. Michael Goodwin writing in the New York Post, Donald Trump and the GOP are shifting to a party for the working class. Not that they'll do it, but rather than the Republican Party, the GOP could become the workers' party. Not socialist, it's capitalist-based. Farewell to the Chamber of Commerce and good riddance to Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Hello, restaurant workers, no taxes on tips. And get this, even big unions could be invited to the party. The change inevitably would lead to a much more diverse Republican Party, as demonstrated by the numerous non-white speakers on Monday. The lineup wasn't a hint that Trump is chasing a progressive-like DEI agenda. The clear justification, they mentioned Amber Rose that we talked about. She hit it out of the park, and I thought she did too. Here is the Teamsters president, Sean O'Brien, his comments on J.D. Vance.
J.D. Vance, the short time that we've worked together, I mean, he's been great on Teamster issues. He is supported, co-sponsored an airline manufacturing bill that addresses outsourcing of critical airline maintenance to China. He's also supported paid sick leave for our railroad workers. If you remember that situation a couple of years ago where they weren't getting sick time, he stepped right up. He's also been very vocal and supportive of holding employers accountable who try and skirt their obligation under an independent contractor model known as DSP. So he's been right there on all our issues. We've publicly stated it. And look, at this day and age, there's nothing better than having a U.S. Marine represented as a vice president candidate.
All right. So this is the bond I was talking about with the Workers Party. That's Sean O'Brien, the head of the Teamsters. He wanted to duke it out with the senator from Oklahoma, who would have tuned him up.
This is a place.
Yeah.
If you want to run your mouth, we can be two consenting adults.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the remarkable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
You can finish it here.
Okay, that's fine. Perfect.
You want to do it now?
I'd love to do it right now.
Well, stand your butt up then.
You stand your butt up.
That's a lot of butts.
Is that your solution, every poll?
No. Sit down. Sit down.
Okay.
You're a United States senator.
Sit down. Activate.
Okay.
Sit down.
This guy, Sean O'Brien's brave in that sense, but this other guy, the senator from Oklahoma, oh my God.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that would not have been good. So terrifying. It came up because one of our great guys, Earl of Tacony, mentioned Amber Rose as an example. This guy, Matt Walsh, who, you know, is on the side that you can call it purist, you can call it ridiculous or just wanting eyeballs, whatever, attacking. How could we bring Amber Rose up there as a speaker? All right. So my point is, we're not in her heart, in her mind. You trust that she has seen the light here. She's seen something different with Donald Trump. She talked about her father. She talked about her own research. Sometimes the right thing, giving her space to say that, and the politically right thing, she's an influencer, are both there. All right. And if they are, that's to our benefit. So now we're supposed to be rejecting all that. And it gets to J.D. Vance and Trump. I think people give Trump space to say, yeah, some of the stuff he's talking about in J.D. Vance are not pure capitalism, but we want to be somebody who is open to helping workers, particularly given what they're up against. And there might be times when there's populism is a blend. So you have the, green eye shades of Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney, Do you want that, or do you want a new way for the Republican Party? Can they go over the line where they compromise too much? Sure. We went through this with the abortion issue. And in the beginning, there were a few people that would call me and say, no, 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 you're wrong. You're compromising principle here. I think people are solidly on board now. That's why Democrats are going after Vance on abortion today, because his position is not exactly in sync with Trump. Trump will set the agenda on that. He'll follow, but his previous positions are not. They're more in line with Ron DeSantis. 855-839-1210. All right, we'll get to all that. Take your calls on it. What's your level of confidence with this task force now? And they got to act quickly. This cannot be weeks and weeks and weeks. Act quickly. What happened here specifically? And then if they won't move to fire the head of the Secret Service and or take other actions, then politically continue to go after them throughout the election. 855-839-1210. You get inside question today provided by this rumor that 50 Cent may personally be singing the walk-up song for President Trump, Many Men, for Trump's walk-up at the RNC on Thursday when he accepts the full nomination after the UFC guy gives the opening speech. So, side question, give us the walk-up music for Trump. We haven't got one for Don Jr. How about for J.D. Vance, who does that tonight? By the way, this is out in the rural area of Pennsylvania. You got to love this, from Catawassa. Yeah, Catawassa, Pennsylvania. In a unanimous vote, members of the Southern Columbia School Board accepted a motion to allow Superintendent James Becker to carry a firearm as an armed school security guard. The amendment adds an extra $300 a month to Becker's current salary to make up for the extra duties and responsibilities. Now, we told you last week when they did this budget deal that they agreed that with proper training and all that stuff, that school districts now would be mandated to have at least one cop, one security person in the schools. I don't think it has to be in every school. It could be rotating, whatever. This school district now, Dan, has the superintendent carrying a sidearm. Not even the principal. They're going with the superintendent of schools there. It doesn't say anything about a shotgun here, but I can see the school board meetings.
I was always super intimidated by the superintendent, and
yeah,
things just ramped up a little bit there.
According to the board vice president, other school employees may also take on similar roles in the future. Not able to confirm if any other school districts in the area are having a superintendent.
So is this in lieu of a school resource officer?
Well, there are others. He's the third one.
Okay.
The grant gives you X amount of money to put into play coming off this school budget thing.
So what I don't like about this, though, is what's stopping a super liberal superintendent from just going out, getting a gun license and saying, I'm going to check off one of those three because I don't want three people in my school district carrying, but I still want this money, so I'm going to hold it myself and not let anybody else have it.
Well, this is what school board elections are about. They'd have to approve that person as one of them, and if they do, they're asking for trouble. So it's going to be interesting to see how Lower Marion deals with this, for example. But in this case, it's pretty clear they're meaning business and they're looking for more people to be armed in schools. My only objection is I don't know if the superintendent is in the schools enough, how that works. But I just thought pretty interesting response to it. All right. So Mike Johnson, the big story today, the speaker, going with a task force rather than all these different committees going after the Secret Service. They got to move, though. He ought to be naming it today and Monday, 9 o'clock. Well, what's the matter with 8 o'clock on this? How about sending a message to the American public? We're holding hearings at 7 o'clock. Yeah, well, I don't want to show up at 7. You're subpoenaed. You'll be in jail by then if you don't. You know, and lunch break, we're going to serve lunch at the desk. We can continue with questioning. This is going to be, are Democrats actually now going to circle the wagons around this Secret Service head? They might. And again, you talk about accountability. So well, the politics of this are not going to play well. It's not going to play well for them. I think we all know this has resulted in a bump for Trump, not just among Trump supporters, but others are saying, wow, look, you know, this is amazing. This guy survived this. We can't be having this. How did this happen? Dan, you might want to roll for sound here. Kamala Harris is addressing in Kalamazoo the assassination
violence
attempt on Trump.
Is never acceptable.
We know all
there
that.
There can be no equivocation.
We know all that. Let's hear what your statement is on it, though.
At the same time, the hallmark of American democracy, the hallmark of any democracy, is a strong competition of ideas, policies, and a vision for the future. And just as we must reject political violence, we must also embrace a robust discussion about what is at stake in this election.
Yeah, let's get to
it. The surest way to reaffirm the strength of our democracy is by engaging in a vigorous and civil exchange of ideas.
Where's that again?
And one of the ideas and one of the principles that is at stake in this election is the issue of reproductive freedom. And that is why I am here
today.
Okay,
well, let me jump in here. Okay, you know what, Dan? They're at least that she's blinking here on this. She wants to introduce reproductive freedom. Fine. Let's continue to do that. I'm okay if she wants to continue saying in this atmosphere, there's nothing wrong with it, to say that President Trump and J.D. Vance are going to ban abortion nationwide. False, but that's within the bounds of a political campaign. The question we want to know is, though, are you going to continue to say the country's over? This is Hitler in the making. That's the only thing we want to know out of all this blather. That's the issue. Saying that Trump is Hitler. Bill Barr put it best, who's not a fan of Trump. We played this all this week. The former attorney general. In fact, they're antagonists now. But no, look at the first term. Where's the Hitler there? Where are you getting this from? They can say whatever they want about abortion. They can say what Vance is and an extremist and all. That's certainly within the frame of what you ought to be able to say, even despite this shooting. What is not is the Hitler talk.
And the bottom line, I think, is that when someone is demonized to the extent that Trump was being demonized, you're putting a target on them. And you're increasing the risk that they are going to become a target for someone who has a mixture of these factors, you know, imbalance, some potential political element to it. They become the target. And what was concerning me was that, and I understand both, you know, the people on both sides that engage in extreme rhetoric occasionally, but what was bothering me was that the thrust of the Democratic narrative for this election year had become that Truss was a mortal danger to our democracy, and if he wins, the country's going away. And when you take that position, you know, that is an apocalyptic and hysterical position that's bound to lead to, violence eventually.
That's the point. We never can get to the point. Never we see that question asked of Harris or Biden, specifically what Barr just said. All right, coming up, we're going to talk with the former head of the Capitol Police about dealing with the FBI, dealing with Secret Service, and his thoughts on what happened here. He was in power on January 6th, and he's had a lot to say about Nancy Pelosi and others. He's next here on Talk Radio 1210. Let's go to Chief Stephen's son. Stephen, welcome back, Chief. Thank you for joining us today.
Hey, Dom. Thanks for having me on again.
So take us a fly on the wall. You're with friends that were in various positions. You don't have to name, et cetera, and you guys having lunch and processing a little bit of this failure that we saw. And maybe you can tell us first, I guess, what you thought on Saturday when you saw this unfold and you got more details. What were you looking at?
Well, I'll tell you, and let me just give you a little bit of background for your listeners. When as your introduction had said, we work with Secret Service on a daily basis. I've been working with Secret Service since 1999. I started doing my first details, actually even earlier than that, in 1991. As a police officer, I did my first detail. Jimmy Carter was in town building buildings in the metro, in the District of Columbia for Habitat for Humanity, and I started working with him at that point. So many decades of experience, but I've done hundreds of presidential details. When you watched it, just the fact that, you know, what I was witnessing was, you know, pure, almost divine intervention when you look at how the president turned his head just right at the right time. And was, you know, grazed by what would have been an absolute lethal shot. It just absolutely stunned me. The president took absolutely great steps, immediately dropped down, which is a secure position for him. And the agents quickly jumped on him to get control of it, of the situation. But you start looking at that. And as soon as anytime a protectee gets injured or specifically shot at, there's an issue that occurred, because Secret Service, the way they build out a site detail, it takes a long time. It takes weeks to build that out. They have a very regimented procedure. They build it out to a certain level where they have everybody within that area screened. And then beyond that, they have spotters. They do regular checks to make sure no one's out there even farther, because you're dealing with handgun distance, then sniper distance. So you can go out several hundred yards. You know, what surprised me is the quick analysis, and you started hearing the rooftop that the shot came from. It's the closest rooftop to the event, yeah, besides the roof right behind it with the Secret Service counter snipers on it that actually neutralize the threat. So, you know, I quickly was watching that and thinking, yeah, there's just something that's just not right here. Somewhere somebody made a mistake, because that rooftop should have been being watched.
Well, how, though, in your experience, that vast experience, I mean, you did it day to day. I've only been at these events doing various things, Stephen, and it seems to me almost impossible that you would overlook this. And the excuse of the head of the Secret Service, well, it was a slope roof. We couldn't have people up there. That's because of injury factor. In your experience, does that seem anywhere? I mean, isn't that the job of the Secret Service? They put themselves at risk to some degree, all the time.
Oh, you put yourself at risk, and if you're concerned, and they've done this in the past, they'll put on harnesses, you know,
yes,
and rope themselves up to areas. I mean, they're tactical officers. That's absolutely ridiculous. I want to try and keep this as clean a show as I can. That is ridiculous, and there's two reasons why I say that. One, if you do deal with a position that creates such a concern, but you still have to keep eyes on it. I've heard people talk about flying a drone. Why don't you just look around the fairgrounds, grab one of those, you know, United rental lift trucks, and put a team up on a lift truck next to it watching the roof, if that's the case. But the number one reason why I don't think that's the case is look at the roof the Secret Service counter snipers that neutralize the threat are on. It has more of a slope,
yes,
than the NAR International. So, no, that absolutely does not hold water. And the thing is, when they go and they do a site detail and they do an analysis of the site, you know, they'll come out and they'll come up with areas of responsibility. So you're going to have an agent that has an area of responsibility, even though it's maybe outside the perimeter, that's supposed to be in charge of making sure all the state and locals, because Secret Service can't do it all on their own. And this is one of the things that I think is really sad, that them blaming it on the state and locals for not covering it. It's a Secret Service site. It's a Secret Service detail. It's ultimately their responsibility. But they should have had a special agent out there checking the posts, making sure all the posts are being covered. And if that post wasn't being covered, then what are they going to do to mitigate that threat? Are they going to cover it, you know, block it with something? But
stop right there. You and Sean Parnell, who's been in combat, you may know of him, you know, fabulous warrior, ran for office and all that. He was there and shot at. He said the same thing, Stephen. What you do is you improvise and you block line of sight there, that it's almost impossible to be able to fire from there.
Yeah, block line of sight, or just put somebody in an elevated position that they can watch the roof. That's just ridiculous. And it's just sad that the director is saying it's state and local's responsibility. The fact that they're inside the building at the time, it's just a terrible mistake.
Now, you've seen this. You've seen massive things, you know, when you've been on talking about January 6th. It just seems almost impossible when your daily mission is to protect the life. Here's something I wanted to ask you. They may have been stretched. The First Lady was over in Pittsburgh. They have that commitment. They're at the convention. We get it. But you've had to make decisions like this. By the book, Trump is not in office. He's only a nominee in their lines. The First Lady is in office, so to speak. But Trump is the much bigger threat risk based upon what we know and what we intuit, that he's getting this all the time versus the First Lady. Don't you take that into account if you need more resources?
Absolutely. Your detail should be threat-based.
Yes.
It will have a standard detail package for former presidents, former vice presidents, things like that. But this detail should be threat-based. I know they're now coming out talking about this Iranian threat. I think that threat's been around for a couple of years if you go back and do a little research into it. So that's not something that's new. But it definitely should have been threat-based. But, you know, you bring up a good point in that you're actually the first person that I've heard that mentioned being stretched thin, especially with the RNC taking place. They would have had some advances out there. But that's where you go and you start relying on who are some of your other, you know, one, first, your federal partners, HSI, Homeland Security Investigations. You'll bring in some of them, and I think some of those were on the detail. And then you're going to turn to your state and locals. You know, they may not be people that do protection every day, but they're at least going to know how to listen to your directions that, hey, this is an area. We don't want to make sure nobody with a gun gets up on that roof, gets in here. They're going to understand the mission. So that's why when you start getting thin, you know, when you're stretched thin and you're relying on state and locals, you know, as long as you make sure they're in post and doing their job, you should be fine.
Yeah, that would make sense to me. So given what you've been through, and given, you know, what happened to you, what do you think should be done here ultimately? With the task force going to start on Monday, what would be the outcome you need to see?
When you say the outcome I need to see, and I'll tell you, I've worked closely with the Secret Service, love the men and women of the agency. They love the agency. They're one of the few agencies that have not lost their legacy. They understand where they come from. They just need to find out why they're getting distracted the way they are. So I would say this, and it's interesting. I've had a couple of people asking that question. How do you feel about what's going on? The big difference here is I'd asked for assistance. It's in multiple congressional reports. It's been found out. They actually changed the law that impacted me. I asked twice in advance of January 6th for assistance, 11 times while we're under attack on January 6th and was denied repeatedly and forced to resign the very next day. I think what needs to be done is as quick as they can do a good investigation. You know, perhaps, you know, it's up to her what she wants to do, but you know, by having her on, actually, to be honest with you, I think they actually have more ability to control her and mandate, you know, that she answers more questions. So there may be one of the reasons she hasn't resigned, and that may be to their benefit. But I think you have the IG now, the Secret Service has indicated they're going to do a full investigation. The Secret Service, the way they do their details, they leave a significant amount of paper trail, everything from their counter snipers, surveys, mm-hmm. to their post. To everybody's responsibility. So they'll be able to go back and look at that very clearly to find out whose area of responsibility that was. I guarantee you it's going to turn out to be somebody's, and somebody didn't make sure it was covered. So I think, you know, they need to look at it as quick as possible. I know the House of Representatives has also indicated they're doing a full investigation. I think she's supposed to be down, even though now I hear that Mayorkas may prevent her from testifying. We'll see, but she's supposed to testify, I think, next Monday.
Well, wait. Let's, you know, if that happens and I don't want to draw you into politics, just for listeners, though, Stephen. I mean, I don't like Republicans waiting on this till next week. We're hearing, you can imagine, you've been through all this more than anybody I can possibly bring on. Parting question for you, we may have asked before, but to refresh. You have to feel vindicated publicly. I mean, we know, based upon your writing and what you've said, exactly what happened here. When that spokesperson for the National Guard talked about it, it's unraveling the blame that was placed on you and others. But why would they not oblige your request?
Why would they not oblige my request for resources?
Yes.
So when you go back and look at it, it all comes down to an optics. When I went to the two sergeant-at-arms requesting the National Guard on January 3rd, and I went twice, I was denied specifically because of the concern for optics. And it goes back to the fact that the Speaker of the House did not want to see National Guard troops up on Capitol grounds. And that's all I wanted, unarmed National Guard troops to help maintain the perimeter of the U.S. Capitol alongside my officers.
Yeah, well, without a doubt. So, you know, I think if it comes out that the head of the Secret Service did not ask and say, we need more here, whatever the request is for manpower. That, to me, is unforgivable. I mean, particularly with this protectee, Stephen, we all know the consequence if the worst had happened with President Trump or any former president in this situation. You have to say, we need to do more. There's no sin in saying you're under-resourced. The sin is, though, if you don't say it.
Right. Now, I think you'll find, I'd be very surprised if over time there's not some people that come out and begin to support the fact that there's a number of people that have said they were asking for additional resources. And I get the impression that there's going to be some validity to that.
Chief, thank you very much. As always, courage under fire, under siege, outnumbered 58-1 on January 6th. Thanks for your service. And in this role, thanks for what you provide. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dom. Take care.
What a great guy, Dan. Thank you for recommending that. That's pretty unique. We're proud of that. We have a relationship with him, and he was able to tell you insight into this. And he didn't go overboard saying anything, but if they need more because they were overburdened that day, that's what you have to do.
Dom Giordano, weekdays noon till 3 from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.